You're a freshly minted private pilot, you passed your check ride 6 weeks ago, and your mom just called to say she's making her famous pecan pie for Thanksgiving, and she really hopes you'll fly down this year. I'm Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we're going to fly across country together, not a real one, a scenario, but I want you to treat every decision point like your certificate and your life depend on it, because someday they will. Shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com, they make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that? Private pilot? Instrument? Commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, here's the setup. You're based at a little non-towered field in central Virginia. Your folks live just outside Asheville, North Carolina. That's roughly 200 miles. You've got access to a Cessna 172. You've flown it maybe 15 times since your check ride, mostly local flights. A couple of short cross-countries with a buddy in the right seat. You've never flown over the Appalachians alone. Thanksgiving is Thursday. Your plan is to fly down Wednesday afternoon, spend the holiday, and fly back Sunday. Simple, right? Here's the thing about scenario-based decision-making. It's not about one big dramatic moment where you either do the right thing or you don't. It's about a chain of small decisions. Each one nudges you a little closer to safe or a little closer to trouble, and the tricky part is that no single decision in the chain feels dangerous by itself. That's how good pilots end up in bad situations. So let's walk through five decision points on this trip. Five moments where the choice you make matters. Decision number one, the go or no-go call on Wednesday morning. You wake up and check the weather. The current conditions at your home field are fine. Scattered clouds at 4,500. Visibility 10 miles, winds light and variable, classic fall day. But there's a system moving in from the west. The area forecast calls for a broken ceiling dropping to 2,500 by late afternoon, with a chance of IFR conditions after dark. The TAF for Asheville shows similar timing. Good VFR through about 4 o'clock local, then things start going downhill. Your plan was to leave at 2 in the afternoon. That gives you maybe 2 hours of solid VFR. The flight should take about 1:45 with the winds aloft. Now here's where I want you to really think, not just about the weather itself, but about the pressure. Your mom is expecting you. You told your brother you'd be there for dinner. You already packed the car. The airplane is reserved. Everything is lined up. This is what the FAA calls get their ITIS, and the Airman Certification Standard specifically tests your ability to recognize it. Under the section on risk management, the examiner is looking for whether you can identify hazardous attitudes and apply the right antidote. Get their ITIS is one of the big five hazardous attitudes. It lives right next to invulnerability and macho. So what do? Here's my answer. If the weather is VFR now and forecast to stay VFR for the duration of your flight, you can go. But you need to adjust your timeline. Instead of leaving at 2, you leave at 11. That gives you a much bigger cushion. You land well before the weather moves in, and you set yourself a hard personal minimum. If the ceiling drops below 3,000 feet anywhere along your route before you depart, you drive. That's the key phrase. Personal minimums. The regulations say VFR requires 1,000 feet above the clouds and 3 miles visibility below 10,000 feet in controlled airspace. But the regulations are the floor, not the ceiling. A new private pilot flying over mountains should be thinking 5 miles visibility and at least 2,000 feet above terrain as a personal floor. I'd argue 3,000. So you move your departure up. Decision made, that's a good one, let's keep going. Decision number two, the weather check at the airplane. You get to the airport at 10:30. You pull up the weather one more time on your phone before you pre-flight, and something has changed. That system is moving a little faster than forecast. The AirMets now show an AirMet Sierra for mountain obscuration along the Blue Ridge, starting around 1 o'clock local. Your route takes you right through that area. Now, the current conditions are still beautiful. You can see forever. The airplane is sitting in sunshine, and this is the most dangerous moment of the entire trip, because right now your eyes are telling you one thing and the forecast is telling you another, and human beings are wired to believe what they can see. This is called the visual trap. It's a cognitive bias. Pilots look outside, see blue sky, and discount the forecast. I've seen it 100 times. I've felt it myself. Here's what a disciplined pilot does. You sit down with your phone or your ForeFlight or your printed weather, and you ask yourself 3 questions. What are the current conditions at my destination? What's the trend? And what's my out if the forecast is right and conditions deteriorate faster than expected? In this scenario, Asheville is still reporting good VFR, but the trend is down and your out is limited because you're flying over mountains. You can't just descend below the clouds when the terrain is at 3,500 feet. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Your out is not "I'll figure it out." Your out needs to be specific. It's a place, a heading, and a decision point. For this flight, maybe your out is Lynchburg, Virginia. It's about halfway. It's in the valley. If you get to Lynchburg and the ridgeline ahead is obscured, you land, period. Set that waypoint. Make it real in your mind. That's your line in the sand. Decision number 3, the in-flight weather change. You departed at 11. The first 45 minutes are gorgeous. You're cruising at 6,500. The visibility is incredible. You can see the Shenandoah Valley stretching out ahead of you like a painting. Then you notice something. The clouds to the west, the ones that were scattered and high, are thicker now. And they're lower. The ridgeline ahead, the one you need to cross, has some wisps hanging on the peaks. Not solid clouds, just wisps. This is the moment that separates pilots who read accident reports from pilots who star in them. Those wisps are a warning sign. Mountain obscuration doesn't happen all at once, it builds. First the peaks get a little hazy, then the wisps form, then the gaps between the wisps close, and then you're in the clouds at 6,000 feet with granite at 5,000 and no instrument rating. Let's walk through this together. You have 3 options. Option 1, continue and hope the wisps stay wisps. Option 2, divert to Lynchburg you're planned out. Option 3, turn around and go home. If you chose option 1, I need you to think about what you just did. You just bet your life on a hope. Hope is not a strategy. Hope is not in the aeronautical decision-making model. And the accident database is full of pilots who hoped. Option 2 is the right call. You're at your decision point. The conditions ahead are changing. You have a perfectly good airport in front of you with fuel and a rental car counter. Land at Lynchburg, get a sandwich, check the weather again. If it improves, you can continue. If it doesn't, you rent a car and drive the rest of the way. You're alive. Your mom still gets to hug you. Option 3, turning around, is also a valid choice. There is never shame in a 180. Now here's the decision within the decision. Let's say you land at Lynchburg. You check the weather and the front has stalled. Asheville is now reporting a broken ceiling at 2,000, visibility 5 miles and haze. Technically still VFR, but you'd be crossing a ridgeline at 3,500 feet with a 2,000-foot ceiling. That math doesn't work. The temptation at this point is enormous. You're so close, you've already flown 45 minutes, the car rental is $60, and your brother just texted asking what time you're landing. This is where personal minimums save your life. Not the ones you set in the abstract on a clear day in a classroom, the ones you actually hold yourself to when the pressure is real. If you said your minimum was 3,000-foot ceilings over mountainous terrain, then 2,000 is below your minimum. The decision is already made. You made it before you left the house this morning. All you have to do now is follow through. Rent the car. Decision number 4. The return trip. Let's jump ahead. Thanksgiving was wonderful. The pie was everything. Your mom promised now it's Sunday and you need to get home. You check the weather. There's a surface-based temperature inversion over the valleys in western North Carolina. Asheville is reporting 400 overcast, visibility 2 miles in fog. Classic fall morning in the mountains. The forecast says it'll burn off by noon. Ceilings should lift to 5,000 scattered by 1 o'clock. Your cousin has to work Monday morning and wants a ride to the airport in Lynchburg. He asks if you can leave early. This is a new kind of pressure. It's not your own desire to get somewhere. It's someone else's expectation and it's subtle. You want to be helpful. You want to be the cool cousin with the airplane who can make things happen. The answer is no, you cannot leave early. The weather is IFR and you're a VFR pilot, period. But here's where I want you to practice a communication skill that is just as important as any stick and rudder technique. You need to be able to say the words, "We can't fly right now," without hedging, without apologizing, and without leaving the door open for negotiation. Try this. The airport is fogged in, we'll leave when it clears. Probably around noon. Grab some coffee. That's it. You don't need to explain inversions, you don't need to justify your decision. You are the pilot in command. Federal Aviation Regulation 91.3 gives you final authority and responsibility for the operation of that aircraft. Use it. Now let's say noon comes and the fog lifts. Asheville is reporting 5,000 scattered, visibility 10 miles. Beautiful. But you also notice that the winds at 6,000 are out of the northwest at 35 knots. Your route home is northeast. That's almost a direct headwind. This brings up fuel planning. With a 35-knot headwind, your ground speed drops from about 115 knots to maybe 80 knots. That turns your 1-hour 45-minute flight into roughly a 2-hour 30-minute flight. Your Cessna 172 holds about 56 gallons usable at roughly 10 gallons per hour. That's 5.6 hours of endurance. So you've got the fuel, but you're now eating into reserves more than you planned. The smart move, plan a fuel stop, even if you don't technically need one, it adds a massive safety margin and it gives you another chance to check the weather and reassess. Find an airport along the route, maybe somewhere in the Shenandoah Valley, and plan to stop there. Decision number 5, the unexpected, you're on the last leg, 40 minutes from home. Everything has gone smoothly since Asheville, and then your oil pressure gauge starts flickering, your stomach drops. Let's talk about what happens to your brain right now. You're going to feel a spike of adrenaline. Your visual field is going to narrow. You're going to want to fixate on that gauge. This is the startle effect, and it is completely normal. Every pilot experiences it. The question is what you do in the next 15 seconds. Here's the framework. Aviate, navigate, communicate, in that order. Aviate. Keep flying the airplane. Check your airspeed. Check your altitude. Keep the wings level. The airplane doesn't know you're scared. Navigate. Where are you? Where's the nearest airport? You should already know this because you've been tracking your position on your sectional or your GPS the entire flight. If there's an airport within 10 or 15 miles, start heading toward it now. Communicate if you're with approach or talking to flight service. Tell them. Cessna 904 Bravo has low oil pressure, diverting to nearest airport, request vectors. If you're not talking to anyone, dial in 12-1.5, the emergency frequency, and announce your situation and intentions. Now let's talk about the actual decision. Is low oil pressure an emergency? That depends. If it's flickering and the oil temperature is still normal, it could be a gauge problem. If the oil pressure is dropping steadily and the oil temperature is rising, that engine could seize. You don't have time to diagnose the difference at 6,000 feet. You have time to land. The Airman Certification Standards for Private Pilot specifically covers emergency operations and specifically asks you to demonstrate the ability to manage an emergency using available resources. One of those resources is the Pilot Operating Handbook, and in the Cessna 172 POH, the emergency section for low oil pressure says exactly what you think it says. Land as soon as practicable. So, land. Don't try to nurse at home. Don't tell yourself it's probably just the gauge. Don't think about the fact that the FBO is going to charge you a ramp fee or that your cousin is going to miss his connection. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is that the airplane is on the ground and you're walking away from it. Now let's zoom out from these five decisions and talk about what connects them all. Every single one of these decision points had something in common. There was an easy choice and a safe choice, and they were never the same thing. The easy choice was always to continue to press on, to hope for the best, to avoid the inconvenience. The safe choice always cost something. Time, money, pride, someone else's approval. The aeronautical decision-making model that the FAA teaches uses the acronym DECIDE. Detect the change. Estimate the need to react. Choose a desirable outcome. Identify actions to achieve it. Do the necessary action. Evaluate the effect. It's a fine model, but I want to give you something simpler. When you're in the airplane and you feel pressure to do something, ask yourself one question. If I do this and it goes wrong, will the NTSB report say the pilot continued despite deteriorating weather? Despite being unfamiliar with the terrain, despite low fuel, despite the mechanical indication. If your decision would follow the word despite in an accident report, change your decision, that's the whole thing. That's the entire framework. Every fatal general aviation accident report I've ever read has some version of that phrase. The pilot continued despite. Don't be the pilot who continues despite. Here's the last thing I want to leave you with. On this scenario trip, you made the safe call every time. You left early, you diverted to Lynchburg, you rented a car, you waited for the fog to burn off. You made a fuel stop, you landed when the oil pressure dropped, and you know what? You still got to Thanksgiving dinner, you still had the pie, you still got home. It cost you a few extra hours and $60 for a rental car. That's the secret that experienced pilots know. The safe decision almost never costs you the trip. It just costs you some time. And time is the cheapest thing you'll ever spend in aviation. This scenario was inspired by real accident reports from the National Transportation Safety Board database and teaching frameworks from the FAA's Risk Management Handbook. If you want to dig deeper into aeronautical decision-making, that handbook is a free download and it's one of the most underrated documents in aviation. I'm Pattern Fly Smart this week. I'll see you next time on Traffic Pattern, right here on Radio Hangar.